Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. I wanted to put together something special for you for Halloween. The show recently celebrated its 1-year anniversary, and I just wanted to say thanks. What I'm going to share with you for this episode was a murder that was discovered on Halloween night in Arlington, Texas. Then I'll read some listener-submitted stories for the Ghost Story and Brushwood True Crime segment. Okay. On to the show. October 31st, 2005. A foul odor was coming from the first floor apartment of 28-year-old Sam Lee. He lived just blocks away from the University of Arlington campus. His parents filed a missing persons report after being unable to contact him for several days. When authorities responded to the 911 call placed at 12:30 a.m., they were confronted with the odor that any trained detective can smell from a mile away. As they entered the apartment, they found Sam's decomposing body wrapped in his own bedding. He had marks on his neck that indicated that he had been manually strangled. His parents were notified, and a person of interest was quickly identified as 20-year-old Kyle Nathan Johnson. Witnesses said that Kyle was seen around Samuel's apartment looking sketchy in the days before the murder. The medical examiner determined that he was likely murdered on or after October 26. His white Chevy Avalanche was missing and it had not been located by authorities. They entered the vehicle into their database as stolen. The relationship between Sam and Kyle was initially thought to be sexual, since Sam was gay. That was quickly dispelled by friends and family who said that Sam was just helping out Kyle, who was homeless. His family had reservations about Sam helping Kyle, but it was just Sam's nature to help those in need. Sam's parents weren't aware that Kyle was actually living with Sam. They thought that Sam was just allowing Kyle to stay at his house to shower and eat, and that's it. His parents said that Sam would help someone until they proved him wrong. Kyle would prove him wrong. He was homeless by choice. You see, his father was a minister in the area, and he had immediate family that he could likely have stayed with. However, he was a transient because he refused to follow the rules of the homes he stayed in. Kyle was clean-cut, athletic, and from most accounts, did not have a troubled childhood. Sam determined that he had enough of Kyle and asked him to leave after Kyle ate all of his food. It was clear to Sam that Kyle was not appreciative of his kindness and was taking advantage of him. Kyle had nowhere else to go, and so an argument started, and Kyle strangled Sam to death. He wrapped him in his own bedding, took video games, CDs, and DVDs to sell at the local GameStop. He drove all the way to Waco, Texas, which is south of Arlington. When the vehicle was searched, there were receipts that were found that were traced back to Kyle. As I mentioned earlier, he had taken some DVDs and games and sold them at GameStop in Plano. He abandoned the car in Waco because he believed it would be a while before it was found. He was right. Authorities didn't discover the vehicle until December. But by January, they were sure of the suspect, Kyle Nathan Johnson. He was apprehended and arraigned on charges of capital murder. He initially refused to comply with authorities, but, surprisingly, confessed to the crime. A trial was avoided and he pled guilty to capital murder. He was sentenced on March 3, 2007, to life with parole after 30 years. He will be eligible for parole on January 26, 2036. He does have a current profile on the Pen Pal website. It states, favorite music, The Smiths / Morrissey, Nine Inch Nails, Radiohead, Depeche Mode, Nirvana, Dum Dum Girls, Tennis, Tori Amos, The War on Drugs, Swans, London Grammar, Tears for Fears, Madonna, and most alt-rock, 80s new wave electronic, and the like. If you like any of the music above, please write. Thank you for your kindness and curiosity. I have been in prison since I was 20 years old. I'm 5'7 and weigh 150 pounds. I'm covered in tattoos and would love to talk about art in general. I will write anyone regardless of race or gender. I have no problem writing gay men, lesbians, or transgenders. Please don't let the length of my sentence turn you off to writing to me. Texas prisons are a nightmare, and we don't have many of the privileges they have in other states. I am also looking for legal help with my own case, and anyone interested in prison reform legal work too. I will never be rude or mean, so don't be afraid to write. Sam's death goes virtually unnoticed because it occurred at the same time when gay men were being murdered in Dallas. There's very little information available on his death or his background, and my hope in sharing his story is that someone knows that Sam was thought of as a caring and kind person who would help anyone in need. Now, I asked for listener stories on their brushes with true crime or the paranormal, and you didn't disappoint. This is Tanisha Fuller's story. Hey, Lainey, I wanted to share my brush with true crime. It was back in 2000, and my father just purchased a brand new car for me. I was driving it back from Reno, Nevada, going home to Richmond, California. I was driving on I-80 when a middle-aged man in a pickup truck pulled up on the side of me and was trying to tell me there was something wrong with my car. Now, my father had checked my car head to toe, and I knew there was nothing wrong with the car. So I waved back and said I was fine. He kept on the side of me for a good 5 minutes, really trying to get me to pull over. I started getting so freaked out that I decided to just ignore him. After another minute, he finally drove off really agitated. I kept driving until I found a really crowded gas station and pulled over, and of course, there was nothing wrong with my car. I just brushed it off and didn't think twice, until 6 months later, I'm watching America's Most Wanted and I see the sketch of the guy on the freeway. He was in the same truck, but it was a different color. He had been going up and down the interstates pulling women over that were by themselves, and once he got them on the side of the road, he would knock them out with chloroform, kidnap, and rape them. He eventually would let them go. I've never been so scared in my life. I called America's Most Wanted and shared my story, but I don't know whatever happened to the guy. But it definitely changed my life, hence my obsession with any and everything true crime. I wrote back to Tanisha and I told her that I was so glad she followed her instinct in this situation and that she didn't waver in her conviction that her car was just fine. But I couldn't find anything on this guy, so if you true crime sleuths know who this is, please message the show. I'd love to find out who that was. Next up are some creepy stories. Jessica, the host of the new podcast, The Asian Madness, shares her experience with sleep paralysis. I was a freshman in college, and I was staying at the dormitory that year. The living conditions and systems are very different in Taiwan. The dorms were super old and depressing looking. We had bunk beds, and it was 6 people per room. So I was taking a nap on a fine sunny afternoon. I was alone, and I could see the sky from the window and hear the birds chirping. I dozed off while lying on my back, and then suddenly I woke up. I looked around the room and everything was the same. My view before falling asleep was exactly the same as when I woke up, except it looked a little darker, not like nighttime, but like intensely cloudy. Also, not a single sound, no birds chirping. I tried to move and nope, I couldn't move. I was terrified. I kept telling myself, okay, there is a perfectly good explanation for this. Obviously, I'm just tired, so my body continued sleeping while my brain woke up. But then, I felt a pressure at the foot of my bed. To be more exact, someone was pressing hard on my feet. I was freaking out. Hard. The pressure began to feel more like hands, and it actually started moving up my body. No, it wasn't sexy. It was scary. The hands moved up with a firm grip and eventually reached my arms. I actually felt a ring on one of the fingers pressed on my arm. I was trying to block everything out visually because I was so scared to death, and the last thing I needed was to see something. Suddenly, everything just stopped. I thought it was over, and I was about to feel relieved when I heard a woman's cackling voice right next to my ear. Laughing at me? I panicked so hard I finally woke myself up completely. The room was sunny again and the birds were chirping. As soon as I was back to normal, I brushed it off and didn't really dwell on it. A few weeks later, my friend was in the dorm napping on my bed, and later that day, she told me that she had a weird sleep paralysis experience that scared her to death. That was a bit uncanny. I suppose it's not super scary, and there might be a good explanation behind it, but I'll never forget the touch and that laugh. Thanks, Jessica. I really hate that I'm recording this at night. I would be completely terrified. And I think my husband, Brett, has an experience with sleep paralysis. So here's his story. Some people have heard of sleep paralysis. Some people may even know what sleep paralysis does. And only those unlucky few that have actually experienced it can tell you how, on some occasions, it bridges the world of the living and the world of the shadow men. This is my experience, and I wish it on no one. Now, I had heard of sleep paralysis when I was in college. Sleep paralysis, in layman's terms, occurs when your brain shuts off your body for sleep, but hasn't quite fallen asleep itself. It leaves you conscious with a body that you no longer have control over. You cannot feel anything, you can't move, and a deep numbness comes over the entire body that is difficult to describe. And it happened to me several times before. The first time it happened was an almost textbook definition of sleep paralysis. My body became fully immobile and I tried to kick my leg or move my arm, and it isn't an entirely comfortable experience. When your body doesn't answer, that's when the panic sets in. All of your fight or flight instincts kick in. Your brain goes into overdrive trying to figure out what is wrong, and if you panic just enough, you'll manage to throw yourself awake. Your heart's racing, there's heavy breathing, and then finally, relief. That had been my experience up until the last few nights. I wish that that was all it was. Now I have no relief. Now I have only dread every time I lay in my own bed. I had an exhausting day at work, but it was otherwise normal. I hadn't been sleeping very well the few nights before, and I was ready to catch some Z's when I got home. Even a 10-minute nap sounded lovely. I closed out the day, waved goodbye to everyone, and drove myself home. That nap was definitely going to happen. Dinner could wait. I arrived home, stripped off my work clothes, and plopped down in the living room recliner. The bed hardly seemed appropriate. After all, I didn't want to nap the rest of my evening away. I got out my phone and set a timer for 10 minutes. Thank God I did. I began to doze off, and my body sank into the couch and my muscles began to relax. This was going to be good, I thought to myself and smiled. Then the numbing feeling of sleep paralysis began to creep over me. I didn't panic. This has happened before. Just calm down, I told myself. I tried wriggling my toes and fingers. Nothing. I tried turning over. Nothing. I tried opening my eyes and they lifted. I sincerely wish they hadn't, because now I could see that I wasn't alone in my house. The recliner faces toward the entryway into my home, and standing by the entryway was a tall, shadowy figure. It was obvious to me at the time that it was a man. I tried shouting, punching, kicking, screaming, but I wasn't coming to. It was at this time that the figure seemed to notice me. It turned its abnormally large head in my direction and smiled. It seemed like a smile. The figure was already a dark gray color, but the area where the mouth should be seemed to grow darker and in the shape of a sinister grin. It began walking towards me. Although walking doesn't seem like the appropriate word to use, it stumbled towards me like something straight out of a horror movie. It was as if frames of a movie had been cut out and he would appear several motions ahead of where he should be in his walk. He was getting closer, and as he got closer, I felt an inexplicable chill come over me. I normally never feel anything in this state, but this was a dark and evil chill. The objects around him seemed to warp and twist like they were nothing more than drops of oil and water. Closer and closer he came. My mind was in full-blown panic mode. A dark, slender arm reached out to touch my face. I tried anything and everything to get some type of grip on my own and my body when... I darted awake on the couch, alone. No one but me here in the room. I searched the entire house, checked all the locks on the doors, and there was nothing. Holy shit. What a dream, I thought. So much for a peaceful nap. I shook off the rest of that nightmare and went on about my day. Night came much faster than I wish it would have. I was actually scared to fall asleep for the first time since I was a child. I dragged it out as long as possible. I brushed each tooth meticulously and even flossed for the first time since I bought the damn floss a year ago. But eventually the time came when I could barely keep my eyes open and distract myself with anything else. I cautiously laid down, wrapped myself in bundles of blankets, and tried to relax. As soon as my eyes closed, sleep paralysis fell over me. I immediately shot my eyes open and fears I didn't even know I had were realized. A group of shadow men hovered along each side of my bed. They talked over me as if in a meeting amongst themselves. Their words were muffled, but their intentions seemed clear. They were waiting for me. All at once, they looked at me and began laughing. Deep, guttural laughter. I wish I could say I remembered most of the night, but I don't. My torment lasted what seemed to be hours. They each took a turn touching me and draining what I could only imagine was my fear from me. I was apparently a limitless supply for them. It's been 3 days since I have slept now. A steady supply of caffeine, Adderall I bought off my nephew, and exercise have kept me going for now. But I'm beginning to hallucinate. And I'm beginning to see them now while awake. I don't think I can hold out much longer. Well, guys, what do you think of Brett's story? I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not you believe it. Now, my mom has a couple of stories she'd like to share. She had some audio difficulties with her microphone, so I apologize in advance.
This story was told to me by both my grandparents and confirmed by my mom and her siblings. This took place when the family went to Paint Creek, Texas, to pick cotton. The nearest town is Haskell, Texas. Mom is the eldest and was 14 years old when this unfolded. My grandfather would move the family wherever there was work in the cotton field. Often they would stay on the property where they were hired. There was talk amongst other workers that they had heard of people not staying long at the particular place that my family was living at. The majority of the field workers lived out in the country. Neighbors weren't close by. Some lived in barrack-like housing. Others lived in shacks or tents. My grandfather happened to have gotten into a small house near the fields they'd be working on. My grandmother was the first to hear noises when she was alone. At times, my mom's brothers would see a shadow. Mom would stay at the house to help my grandmother with chores around the house or help sew clothes that were in need of repairs while the rest of the family would go into town. Ma would say she would be sewing or doing chores and feel as though someone was watching her and at times pinching her. At night, she would feel as though something heavy was upon her chest. My grandparents had gone into town one afternoon to take my uncle to the doctor. As night fell, my mom could hear the washtubs banging on the wall. The washtubs were hung up on the wall back in the day. She thought maybe the family had come home. She went to check, but there wasn't anyone around. She went on to do more sewing. All of a sudden, Mom felt a scratch on her arm. It scared her, needless to say. My mom had told my grandparents what had happened as soon as they got home. My grandparents prayed and sprinkled holy water on the kids and throughout the house. The spirit became more actively aggressive and would scratch my mom on her arms and legs. By this time, my grandfather had heard of a curandero, also known as a healer, so they took my mom to see him. The curandero informed my grandparents that the spirit was that of a man that had died on the land and buried a bag of money near a fence post. The spirit was restless because no one ever knew about this money. The spirit said they could have the money, but the price for the family to have that would be someone's life. The curandero gave my grandparents a remedio, translation, remedy, in order for them to remain in the home. My grandfather opted to not go back. Instead, they left Haskell and returned back to South Texas. No one in the family ever felt that presence again. The next story happened to me personally in 2004. It is very close to my heart and still remains fresh. My friend Manuel was a young husband and father of three children. His 10-year-old son was living in Texas when this happened. Manuel's 6-year-old daughter and 5-month-old son were living in California, where his wife had been stationed in the Navy. Manuel himself had been in the Army for several years before and wanted his wife to have a fair share of worldly experiences. Once settled in California, things weren't going too well for them on a personal level. Manuel and I would often speak of their troubles, and I had mentioned to him that I would go visit him in March while visiting my son, who was also stationed in the same area. Manuel thought it was a great idea. I last spoke to Manuel on February 13th. When I did make it out there, I called him several times and left him messages. I figured he was busy, and perhaps under the circumstances, it was his way of getting out of the visit. A few weeks had passed after I had returned to Texas. On Monday, April 12, 2004, the day after Easter, I had called Manuel's old boss at a part-time job to ask her if she had heard from Manuel. Misha's reply was, "You don't know? Manuel killed himself. He killed himself on Valentine's Day. He was talking to his daughter when he shot himself." I froze. I hung up immediately and called my mom. I was devastated. I ended up getting sick and stayed with my mom for about 3 days. After I went back to my apartment, I remember crying and yelling at him, asking him, why did he do this? And how could he have done this to his little girl? Didn't you know, Manuel, that we all loved you and we were here to help you? I reached out to Manuel's mother and siblings. It was important for me to say goodbye to him, but his family had no clue as to what his estranged wife had done with his ashes. One evening, as I was sleeping, I heard the sound of keys rattling, something that Manuel would always do. The sound woke me up, and when I sat up in bed, there was Manuel sitting at the edge of my bed. He looked towards me and said, "I'm sorry, it's kind of lonely here." I started to cry and asked him why. Manuel slowly faded away. A few years later, after he had crossed over, I attended a psychic fair in Richardson, Texas. I had a session with a medium named Duana. She described a young man with a gunshot wound that was wanting to come through. I confirmed that I knew who it was. She told me, "He says that he's not lonely anymore. He's okay now."
Now you're going to hear from my brother, and he's going to share what happened to him one terrifying evening after I was born.
November 17th, 1987 was a day celebrated by my family because we had grown by one. A day of joy transitioned to a night that would change the course of my life and make me aware of the unexplainable things in this world. My grandmother and aunt were driving to a hospital in a nearby town. It was already dark and the road was not fully developed and there weren't any street lights. It was gravel and lots of tall trees still surrounded the area. We were in an Oldsmobile Cutlass, so if you know the car, you know the transmission tunnel's raised in the back. Well, my grandmother was driving and my aunt sat in the front seat, and I was in the back alone. I was standing and straddling the transmission tunnel, leaning forward on the seat, listening to them chat. I don't know how long we were on the road, but the drive was a total of about 45 minutes. And they were chatting away. All of a sudden, I felt something grab my right calf. It wasn't a crushing grab, but it was a really firm grip. I immediately fell back into the seat and was trying my best to yank free. It wasn't right away, but I managed to get both legs up on the seat and had them tucked against my chest. I was in shock. I couldn't say anything. I couldn't scream. Nothing. Meanwhile, my grandmother and aunt carried on as if nothing was happening. Well, once we got to the hospital, I had opened my door at the same time they did. That way I wouldn't get shut in and the lights would stay on and I'd feel safe. As we transitioned from the car to the hospital room that my mom was in, that's when it all made sense. That day, you see, is the day my sister was born. And along with her, into this world, came something evil. and I'm certain that the two are related. Nothing's happened since, at least not similar to that experience. Other things have happened, and I don't know why, I don't know how. I'm certain I wasn't dreaming because I was standing and listening and in on the conversation, so that couldn't have been it. I'll always question it, but I'll always know the reason why.
Okay, fan club members, as I conclude this episode, my one question to you is, how will you sleep tonight? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCPod, Facebook.com/TCFCPodcast. You can find us on Instagram, TCFC_podcast. And of course, our website is TrueCrimeFanClub.com. If you have an episode request or a general suggestion, send us an email, TCFCPod@gmail.com. Custom music for the show was provided by We Talk of Dreams, who created custom music just for us. Check them out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or WeTalkOfDreams.com. Special thanks to those who contributed their time and stories: Tanisha Fuller, Jessica Wan, my mom Monique, my brother Nino, and my husband Brett. Thank you so much for joining me for this special bonus episode. I'd like to give our Patreon supporters a shout out: Chris O, Stephen P, my niece Aaliyah, and Nikki C. I hope everyone has a safe Halloween